I love it when I don't have to worry about how things are going to sound. And so this morning, I want to start our topic. This week, we're covering a new part of our Game Changer series. In this fall series, we're talking about things that are game changers in life. And today, we're going to talk about who are you in relation to? Who are you in relation to? And I think we all naturally understand that when we attach our lives to things and to people that are greater than us, it enhances the value. For instance, this football is probably like a $50 football. And if I go out and I buy this football and I go play with it for a little while and it gets scuffed up and it gets used, and let's say I wrote my name on it, it would not add any value. No, it would not if I put my name on this football. And if I went to go sell it, I wouldn't be able to get my $50 back. I'd probably get $5 at a garage sale. And so here we go, Lucas, I hope you catch this right there. But if we take this football right here, this one has Daryl Johnston's signature on it, three-time Super Bowl winner, the Moose. See, people thought you were booing me, but he was really saying Moose, right, Rick? There you go. And so whenever Daryl Johnston put his name on this football, do you think the value went up? Anybody think the value went up on this? Yes, the value went up on this one. This one was in a little trophy case in the back, and Mark Brandenburg let me take it out, and I was so thankful that he did. But we naturally know that the reason why the value went up is because greatness was attached to it. And so now this rather inanimate, not very expensive football becomes more valuable because it's attached in relationship to something that is greater. Today, I want to talk about the same thing. I want to talk about in our lives, who are we in relation to? Because God is the greatest of the great. And if you want your life to have greater value, if you want it to have eternal value, then you must attach your life to him. And then everything in life down here will work when we get the vertical right. I also want to take a moment to say today we're repping local schools for the rest of this sermon series, and we have some coaches that are coming today, and we have a lot of students that go to Lone Star High School. So let's take a moment and honor the Lone Star Ranger football team. Currently 5-0, undefeated, so exciting season. And so we're going to be doing the Lobos of Little Elm next week, so excited about that one as well. If you have a high school that you can get me a jersey to, I will wear it. So that's it. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 6 is going to be our macro verse for this morning's message, that in Psalm 37:23. In Proverbs 3, it says, "In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths." And so this morning, he's saying that if you can acknowledge him first, then it's contingent, right? If you want to straighten out any mess that's in your life, that will not occur until you acknowledge him. So he gives you a contingent offer this morning that he can straighten it out, but you have to first learn to acknowledge him. In Psalm 37, it echoes the same sentiment. It says, "The steps of a man are established by the Lord when he delights in his way." So sometimes we feel like we're on shaky ground. Raise your hand if you've ever felt like you're on shaky ground. It's very uncomfortable when we are uncertain about our footing, right? If you're ever in a relationship, and some of you remember back before you were married and you were dating, and did you ever have that like uncertainty, like it's like something would happen or something would not happen, and or someone didn't answer your phone call, or you gave somebody a note? Remember back in those days before texting anybody, you'd give someone a note and you don't get a note back. Oh, and so we would feel uncertain, right, in our relationship. Sometimes it's at work whenever you don't hear from the boss for a long period of time and you might know some layoffs are coming. You could start to feel uncertain and uneasy and feel some instability in your life. Of what value would it be this morning if you could know that your footing is established? He said, whenever you are passionate about my ways, then you can know that your footsteps will be established. Man, this morning, I hope that we can learn how to unlock life. that a right relationship with God first will make everything else work. That you can have security and that you can have straightness in your life. So this morning, the rest of the message is going to be unfolding several stories that illustrate these points about how to have a right relationship with God and what a right relationship does. However, a lot of times it helps us to define the positive by the negative so that we can get a proper understanding. So number one, I want us to look at what it looks like to have a pattern of a wrong relationship with God. What does it look like when we are in wrong relationship with God? What are some markers that we can look at and examine our lives so that we can know this morning, is there some adjustment that needs to occur? Number one, in the Old Testament, whenever the people, if you read 1st, 2nd Samuel, 1st, 2nd Kings, 1st, 2nd Chronicles, you will see a prevailing pattern over and over again. Everything is going well, God is being honored, they are in right relationship, and then it says, but then this generation forgot God. They forgot Him? I mean, they were going along, they were doing well, and then they forgot God. And many times, I think we kind of deceive ourselves into this concept that, you know, we're acknowledging God, and then we get busy, maybe we get selfish, maybe we get lazy, whatever it may be, and we have a false mindset that believes that we can forget God but maintain a static relationship or status with God. But the problem is when we forget to honor Him first, we begin naturally, intrinsically, in our sin nature to forsake His ways. So forgetting God as first in our lives leads to forsaking His ways. And then we get involved in sin. We get involved in selfishness in our relationships. And it leads to all of these dark places. So this morning, a wrong relationship with God is whenever we forget Him and then we start forsaking His ways. And I thought of what would be some good litmus test, some introspective questions we could ask ourselves to see whether or not we might be in wrong relationship. Three questions I want to ask. Have you ever wondered why hope is elusive in your life? Has anybody ever had that issue where it doesn't matter what you do, it seems like hope is elusive? It just seems like you can never get over that barrier. And it doesn't matter what you've tried, it doesn't matter how you've attacked it, it just seems like hope is elusive. If hope is elusive to you this morning, I would tell you that's a good marker that you might not be in right relationship with God, because He gives us hope. I mean, hope and peace that surpasses all understanding. So this morning, hope is available to us, but we have to learn to acknowledge Him first. Number two, have you ever wondered why satisfaction in what you do has drifted away? You used to be satisfied in what you do, but now you're discontent. But show of hands, has that ever happened to somebody? You ever lost satisfaction in what you do? I bet we all have. Let's think about that for a moment. What is the cause of that? What causes that dissatisfaction? What causes that drift? And I would submit to you that whenever we're acknowledging God, He gives illumination and revelation to what we do. He adds purpose to our passion. But whenever I get my eyes off of God, whenever that right relationship turns into a wrong relationship, and I forget to honor God first in my life, then my passion and my purpose begin to dissolve. And that leads to dissatisfaction in what I'm doing. It no longer has a grander purpose because it's not attached. It's not in relation to something greater. So this morning, if we would acknowledge Him first and then allow what we do not to define us, but who we are in relationship with God to define us, then it would give satisfaction. It would illuminate what we do. Number three, have you ever wondered why the love you once felt has melted away and turned to misery? Has anybody ever wondered that? Like, why does that happen? Like, couples, when they get married, hopefully they're in love and they love each other, and you see them, they sit so close to one another in church. They're like, they look like Siamese because they're so close to one another, and they're like, you know, rubbing each other's back, you know, might even like slip the hand in the old back jean pocket of the other every now and then, and they walk kind of at the fairgrounds like this, you know, whatever it may be, and you know what, they're just so in love, they want to show everybody how much love they have for one another, and oftentimes we find that sustainability becomes difficult because we're people. And we bring our personality into the relationship, and we're all going to have these things about us that drive the other person a little crazy. And if you're not careful, that love begins to melt and turns into misery. What if I told you that if your love for those that are closest to you has melted and turned to misery, what if I told you this morning that that is a good indication, a marker, that you're in wrong relationship to God? Because if you're in right relationship to Him, it will make the most important relationships work. It will make the most important relationships be something that you look forward to and something that you find value in. And so when a couple decides that they're both going to be in right relationship with God, imagine how great that life would be. So if you're looking for the love to return, I would tell you, instead of trying to make it right horizontally first, I would say go vertical and get your life right with God, and He can give you love, He can give you compassion, He can give you forgiveness for offenses that might have occurred, and He can bring you closer together than you've ever been before. But you have to learn to acknowledge Him in all that you do so that He can straighten out any messes in your life. You have to learn to delight in His way, not your way, His way, so that He can establish your footing. Whenever we are in wrong relationship, the problem is that it always leads to the same place. All times in our life when we find ourselves in wrong relationship has the same destination, and that destination is pain. Whenever you find yourself emotionally, physically distraught, stressed out, worried, preoccupied with the physical things of this world, pain is always the destination whenever we get in wrong relationship with God. So this morning, if you have any sense that there's some disconnectedness, then maybe this morning you could see how we can pivot and make this adjustment. So, next point is, vertical connection gives us freedom in horizontal direction. And I'm going to tell you that I believe that most or a lot of us, a lot of our life is spent worrying about the wrong things. You see, many times we fret over direction. And the reason why we're fretting over direction, the reason why we're fearful about our direction is because we lack vertical connection. And there's a freedom that's involved in direction whenever you have the right connection. And I'm going to illustrate this in just a moment with Joshua. Before I do that, we have a video that we're going to watch. I asked my good friend over at Fellowship Church, Ed Young Jr., I told him we're doing this series called Game Changer. And if you could you interview Tony Romo? Because I'd like to use that for my sermon this morning. He was so kind to do that. I thought we'd watch this. And Tony is describing the early part of his career where he had to make peace with God about his direction, and how that direction ended up not mattering. What mattered to him most was the connection, and that connection is what gave him peace. So if you guys would watch this with me.
I was literally right here. I was in that room over there in my second year in the NFL, and I was at training camp. And it was, in the NFL, you keep three quarterbacks at the most.
Okay.
You know, on your football team. And we had went to the playoffs the year before. Mm-hmm. The returning starter's coming back. We brought in an old veteran to challenge him for the starting role, and we brought in a young kid that we traded for who was possibly the future of the franchise. So you have the returning starter, the old veteran, and then the future guy, and then I'm there too. So the numbers as you look at it are very like, it's going to be tough.
Yeah.
So I was very stressed and emotional over the first 2 or 3 days of camp, and I sat there and I prayed at night. I said, Lord, if I am meant to be an assistant golf club professional back in Burlington, Wisconsin. Uh-huh. I was like, then I'll be happy and enjoy that and be the best version of that I can be. You know, but I'm done making every single thing be the most important moment of my life. And everything. There's no peace in that. I'm like, I'm giving it to you.
That's right.
And I literally just said, I'm just going to go out there tomorrow and I'm going to throw that ball. I'm just going to say, he's open. I'm reacting. And I'm just going to let it go and throw it. I'm not going to worry if I throw it 8 yards over his head or in the dirt. I'm done aiming. And I'm just at peace with whatever happens. But I'm not going down hoping, thinking. I'm going to play aggressively. And I'm just going to leave it up to you and just be at peace with whatever the outcome is. And I remember the next day was just freeing. It was freeing. I just gave it to the Lord. It was he all of a sudden had it. And I could just go play. And I had my two or three best practices in the next 3 days. And the starter ends up getting cut.
Wow.
3 days later, I end up making a team and then came up from there. But I still relate. That was the moment where I learned how to play the game. Because I literally gave it up. He has control. And as long as he has control, I'm at peace.
Man, give it up for Tony Romo, the theologian, my new favorite quarterback. I mean, man, when I gave it up is when I found my freedom. As long as he has control, I have peace with whatever outcome may be. Oh, man, wouldn't that be freeing for you this morning? That it didn't matter what the outcome was, that you could have peace no matter what happens? He said it was the vertical connection that gave him freedom in the horizontal direction, whether that's a golf pro back in Wisconsin or whether that's quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. He said, I'm tired of aiming. Think about that this morning. Many of you are trying to control your life. You're trying to aim your life, and you are always calculating, oh, which direction, and you're sitting there like, oh, I don't want to mess this up. I don't want to go the wrong direction. Oh, what's going to happen? What if I told you that if you would get the vertical connection right, it doesn't matter what the horizontal direction is? I'll give you biblical proof. Joshua chapter 1, verse 7. Moses has handed the baton to Joshua, and Joshua is getting ready to lead the people of God into the promised land. And God gives him the blueprint, the formula for success. And this is the same formula I'm going to give to you today. And this is going to take all of my warriors that are in the room this morning, all the people that are fretting over, oh, which way should I go, Tim? This is going to help you out this morning to give you something to stand on. It says that God told this to Joshua, only be strong and very courageous. Be careful to do all according to what the law of Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn from the left or the right. He's saying, focus on the vertical, the spiritual relationship with me, that you may have good success wherever you go. Do you see what he's saying there? It doesn't matter where you go. If you get the vertical relationship right, the vertical connection right, then the direction is insignificant. How much freedom would that be for you this morning to know that it doesn't matter if you go left or right at the fork in the road? What matters is that you're under the umbrella of God's favor. I mean, wouldn't that be tremendously freeing for you? Here was Joshua, a novice at leading the people, and God said, it doesn't matter which way your feet go. What matters is that you're in right relationship with me. So many people could be free from their fretting if they would learn to focus on the vertical, a right relationship with God, not on the direction that they're going. So I wanted to illustrate this more. Last week we covered Lot and his wife, and she turned back. Does everybody remember that? She turned into a pillar of salt. That's right. Well, if we were to get the rest of the story, the reason why Lot and Abraham separated is because their shepherds that were under them began to argue about the ground for their flocks. And they had been so blessed that they had outgrown the pasture. And so it became such a controversy that Abraham said, you know what, it's better for us to go our separate ways. And he presented an option to Lot. And he said this, if you want to put the verses up on the screen. He says, all right, Lot, this is what's going to happen. It's best for us just to go our separate ways. And I bet many of you have been in a relationship like this before, like in a work relationship or a business relationship. And it's like, it's time for us to go our separate ways. He said, Lot, I tell you what, I'm going to let you choose. He said, you could choose left or you could choose right. But if you go left, I'm going right. If you go right, I'm going left. Your choice. Now, when you consider this, who's the head honcho here? Is it Abraham or is it his knucklehead nephew, Lot? It's Abraham, right? Who's made all the right decisions? Abraham. Who's led to the favor and the blessing and all of what they have? Abraham. I mean, if Lot had a clue, he would have wanted to stay close to the source, right? Abraham, the blessing. But he wasn't. He was a knucklehead. And so he says that he chose the best place. It says that he went down to Egypt and that it was well-watered. It was beautiful. I think it's the next verse, right? There you go. And it was this beautiful place for his flock. Now, if I was Abraham, I think I would tend to say, you know what, I'm going to take first choice because I'm in charge here. Anybody else, like, if you were in a position of power, would you let the knucklehead nephew decide your fate? No. You would say, I'll tell you what, I'm taking this and you get the rest, right? Now, how confident was Abraham? Consider. He said, it doesn't matter what you do, Lot. If you choose the best place for your flocks, it doesn't affect me. Imagine how freeing it would be for you this morning to come to a realization that other people's choices do not affect your chance with God. Wouldn't that be freeing for you? It doesn't matter what they choose, because the favor was not with Lot. The favor of God was with who? Abraham. Therefore, the favor traveled wherever he went. It wasn't dependent upon his location. It was dependent upon his relationship with God. And because he was in right relationship, he didn't have to fear about the choices of others. Do you think that we often fall into this trap of thinking that our fate is determined by people around us? Is anybody ever fall, anybody, ever, yeah? You know, I mean, like you think, man, well, if they choose this, well, what's that gonna do? You know, well, my boss doesn't choose me, then if I don't get this contract with this person, then, and we tend to evolve our thinking around that our chance with God, our chance in life is completely wrapped up in other people's choices. What if I told you that there's a greater plane that you can live on? That you don't have to walk around in worry, that you could walk in confidence knowing that your footsteps are established, that you could walk in confidence knowing that it doesn't matter what mess you might find yourself in, you can unlock and unravel all of it by acknowledging Him first in your life, and all of a sudden He can straighten anything out. But you have to get the vertical right, then you have freedom to go wherever you want. I know so many preachers, okay? So I'm not even talking about people that sit in the pew. I'm talking about guys that stand on the stage, that proclaim the Word of God, that are paralyzed by choices. I don't know. Should I do this? Should I do that? Should I do this? Should I do that? If I do this over here, are they going to like me? Are they going to follow me? Is the crowd going to come? Oh my gosh. Do you know why you're focused on those things? Because that's the flesh. That's the flesh that believes that you're actually in control. You see, once you acknowledge that God is supreme and that He supersedes your authority and that He actually has divine authority over all things, then all of a sudden, it's not you. It's not you, it's Him. So you don't have to aim anymore. All you have to do is be connected. And when you're connected, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because it's in His hands. So I want to finish with three illustrations of a concept. When ordinary, unusual, and unexpected things come into right relationship with God, amazing things will happen. This is a universal truth that God can take the most random, inanimate objects and turn them into supernatural, incredible, life-giving revelation, illumination type of things. I want to give you three examples of this, and I want you to think about this as an analogy for your life. Number one, a way of victory was revealed through an inanimate object that God came into contact with. And I want to tell you a little bit about the story of David and Goliath. By show of hands, everybody remember the story? I mean, I think most people know this story. And so David goes out into this valley, and he's a young teenage man, and as he's walking out of this valley, he doesn't have a weapon of warfare. Whenever they were handing out standard issue military, you know, equipment, a slingshot from a shepherd was not like, okay, you're going out there, make sure you get your slingshot before we go out to battle. That's not what they gave them. Does everybody understand this? They gave them swords, they gave them spears, they gave them shields. Sometimes they had helmets of metal, and that's what a soldier went out to battle in. And Saul, David's king, even tried to give him his own armor, and David rejected it because he said, this isn't what I've used before. All I know is the slingshot, and God's been pretty good to me with the slingshot, so I'm just going to go with what God has given me. And then he walks out into the valley, and here is this giant, this 10-foot-tall giant named Goliath, who was seasoned in battle. He had the skins on the wall. And I want you to think about for a moment, because sometimes I think we think that maybe David got off a lucky shot. I don't know. Is anybody else like he like reached into his bag and he grabbed his slingshot out and woo, and he like let it go. I want you to think about this. If Saul was the Goliath was the champion of the Philistines, do you not think that he did not possess the agility to dodge a rock from a shepherd boy? Does anybody think that like he didn't have the ability to do this? Okay? No. He had the ability to do that. And if you think about it, the slingshot, do you think the slingshot had the power to kill the giant? No, it didn't have the power to kill the giant. It was not the power of the slingshot from the shepherd boy that guided like rocket precision toward the giant's head in such a way that he was unable to avoid the shot. It was not the power of the slingshot, it was the plan of God. And the inanimate object came into right relationship with God's will. And it was able to give a victory that was impossible to the person that possessed the object. What's the point? You have things in your possession that could give you a victory. Talents in your possession that could give you a victory. But in and of themselves, apart from God, they are just objects, incapable of delivering. But you could take the most ordinary, random, inanimate objects and attach them to God's will. If you would allow the stuff in your life, if you'd allow the talents in your life, you'd allow the heart, the love that's inside of you to come into right relationship with God, He can give you victories over giants that were impossible before. So this morning, I don't know what obstacle may be in your path, but instead of you trying to take on the giant in your own strength, what if you attached your life to God and allowed Him to guide your hands? You might find some victory that otherwise wouldn't be possible. Not only did He reveal a victory that was impossible, He also reveals a way to be healed that was rather unexpected. There was a general in Syria named Naaman, and 2 Kings chapter 5 kind of gives us this really cool story of this general that was over in Syria, and he contracted this incurable disease called leprosy. And there happened to be a Hebrew servant that had been sold into slavery to the Syrians in the king's house. And so as the general was talking to the king about his condition, the servant spoke up and said, hey, there's a guy in Israel named Elisha that could heal your disease. I mean, he's a man of God, the God of the Bible, the God of the Hebrews. And imagine how difficult it must have been for a guy that had grown up in a completely different system, a pagan system, and had never acknowledged, never heard of the God of the Hebrews. And now he's going to have to leave his countrymen, leave everything that he's ever known to travel to Israel, which was an incredibly long journey, to find this man of God whom this slave says could magically heal him. I mean, when you get to a point of desperation, right? Death, when death comes knocking at your door, the hardened skeptic can become very open to any alternative. Can I get an amen? I mean, somebody that doesn't believe in God at all, death come knocking at your door. All of a sudden, you might start realizing that you want to be prepared for the eternal life, not just the temporal life, right? And so here is Naaman, as skeptical as he might have been, says yes to the opportunity. He travels to Israel and he meets this man named Elisha. And Elisha tells him that you need to go dip in the River Jordan seven times, and you will be healed of your incurable disease. Now that sounds crazy in and of itself. Am I right? Because the Jordan River, the last time I checked, did not possess the power to heal incurable disease. As a matter of fact, Naaman got upset because the Jordan River was, let's say, nasty. Instead of having a central sewer system, the stuff just was dumped into the river, and so it had a nice scent. And so when Naaman considered what he was saying of what was going to heal him, he looked at this river and he was like, I am not doing that. And thankfully, God had put a servant beside Naaman, and you better thank God for the people that he puts in your life. When you're being dumb, when you're being hard-headed, when you're being a knucklehead, and God will bring someone alongside of you and says, let's just think about it for a moment. Let's just think about it. We came all this way, and if he would have told you to climb a mountain, would you have climbed the mountain? He's like, yes, I'm a general. That's what I do. And you could just feel the testosterone coming out of Naaman, right? You're like, yeah. If he asked you to slay a dragon, would you have done it? Yes, I would have ate the dragon for breakfast. He said, well, he just asked you to dip in this river seven times, and we've come all this way. Wouldn't you at least be willing to try it? And Naaman relented, and he walks down to the river, and he dips seven times. And on the seventh time, he comes up, and he's completely healed. Now, I want you to notice something, that this river had no power to heal. But when this river came into contact with its creator, its purpose was transformed, right? And God takes this river of refuse and he turns it into a harbor of healing. What am I trying to say to you this morning? That a lot of times you have some hurts that are in your life, and God has a way to heal those hurts. God has a way to bring supernatural healing to your life. But if you don't get the vertical relationship right, you'll be like Naaman when he was standing in his stubbornness, standing in his pride, saying, God, I'm not going to go down there. I'm not going to go talk to that person. I'm not going to submit to that authority. I'm not going to get under your word. No, I'm going to keep trying to figure it out on my own. And God's saying, but wouldn't you try this morning? He sent me by to be the servant this morning just to tell you, wouldn't you at least give it a try? Because what if healing was right there, right in front of you, available to you? But it will only be revealed when you get the vertical relationship right. He can take things that you never thought could be used the way that he can use them and blow your mind. Last one this morning, a way out was revealed to Moses. I don't know if you remember the story of Moses. He was a shepherd on the backside of Midian and was outcast because he had killed an Egyptian. And as he was out there 40 years in the wilderness, seemingly having very little conversation with God, and darkness had surrounded him, and perhaps he had even given up on ever being used again because of a sin that he had committed. And maybe you can relate to that. Maybe you're in a season of life where you feel like God is far from you this morning, and God shows up in a burning bush and begins to have a discussion with Moses. And as he's having that discussion, he says, Moses, I'm going to use your life to deliver the nation of Israel, that all the slaves that are held captive, they're going to be delivered by you. And I want you to take this staff that you've been using to guide these sheep, and I want you to take it, and I want you to go before Pharaoh and have a conversation with him, and then lead the people out of Israel. Now, what's so awesome about God is that he did not give Moses a sword, right? He did not give him a weapon of warfare. He just gave him a piece of wood, a piece of wood that was used as a staff, as a shepherd, that if it was laying on the stage this morning, you wouldn't look upon it and go like, man, I wish I could have a staff like Moses' staff. No, it wasn't like copper. It wasn't gold. It wasn't a platinum on his staff. It was just an ordinary piece of wood. And as he guides the people out after the plagues have subsided, God leads the people to this bottleneck where the Red Sea is in front of them and the Egyptian army is behind them and they're closed in what appears to be a trap that is fatal and there's no way out. I don't know if you've ever felt like you were in a situation where there wasn't a way out, but that's a good time to call upon the name of the Lord. Can I get an amen on that? Because God has an amazing way to make a way where there is no way. Like literally, there is no way. And so what he told Moses, here's the plan. I want you to take this shepherd's staff, and I want you to lift it up, and I want you to tell the people that today God is going to part the waters. Yes, he's just going to part them, roll them back, and you are going to walk across on dry ground, something that had never been done before, something that had never been seen before, that God was going to make a way where there was no way. And he was going to use this inanimate object that was going to come in contact with its creator, with its maker, and creation must obey its creator. The creator supersedes the authority of the creation so that when it comes in right relationship, all of a sudden, a way can be made where there was no way. I wonder this morning if there's anyone in here that sometimes feel like you're surrounded. You're entrapped, and there's no way out. There's nowhere to turn. Maybe it's not that you're trapped. Maybe God has positioned you for you to learn to acknowledge him and allow him to make a way where there is no way. I concluded that this was a great metaphor that exemplifies salvation. That God used this inanimate, ordinary, common piece of wood to make a way where there was no way. Because 2,000 years ago, I think we see some similar examples in the fact that God took an ordinary, old, rugged piece of wood called the cross. And that this cross, its anthem was shame. Whenever people thought of the cross, they only thought of condemnation and they only thought of pain. It represented one thing, and that was death. And it was the most egregious criminals that were crucified. And this ordinary, old, rugged piece of wood that was meant for death, all of a sudden, it came into contact with God's Christ, the Savior of the world. And the purpose of the cross was transformed from a way of certain death to a way of certain life. And he made a way where there was no way, a way of escape for our sin, a way of healing for our broken hearts, a way of victory for our past defeats. And so God is able to take this old rugged cross and make a way for us to live. This morning I want you to think about whether or not you have a vertical relationship with God. Have you ever come to the cross and made peace with God and said, God, I acknowledge that the cross is my only way out of my sins, that the cross is my only way out towards salvation, that the cross is the only way out so that I might have eternal life. Man, God is so good that he can make a way of escape. It doesn't matter how bad you've been. It doesn't matter how far you've gone the wrong direction. If today you would turn, repent, and acknowledge him, fall at the foot of the cross, he can take your life that is headed toward death and speak life into your heart this morning. Would you stand right now at this moment, and the band is going to come out and lead us in a time of reflection. As they're coming out, would you bow your heads? And I would like to pray for you this morning, this moment. God, I pray that we would all get our vertical relationship right. That if love in our most important relationships have melted and turned into misery, that is an indicator, a warning sign that we've stepped out of right relationship. We've stepped in to wrong relationship, and we need to turn before it's too late. That God, if we can't find satisfaction in what we do, that it is an indicator that we've not attached it to your purpose, that what we do is not in contact with your will and your word. That God, if we would turn and acknowledge you, that you would give purpose to our passion, that you would give us footing that is established, that we wouldn't have to walk around on shaky ground feeling like our world is unstable, that God, you could provide peace to our instability. God, this morning I pray that we would all turn to you and say, God, we want our connection. That's our focus. That you will figure out the direction, but God, we want to know that our connection is intact. God, it's in your name we ask these things. Would you guys join us as we worship?